I'm Steve Potter, and ahead on Cityscape, 6 bands and 5 venues in Grand Center. It's the American Music Showcase, featuring everything from jazz to bluegrass, and we'll let you know what to expect. But first, a photography exhibition currently up at the Missouri History Museum gives a voice to homeless veterans. I Was a Soldier is on display until January 20th of next year. Jerry Tovo is the photographer behind this 6,000-square-foot exhibition, and he joins us now. Welcome to Cityscape.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
Jerry, we know that many soldiers, former soldiers, deal with a variety of issues, you know, once they're home. And when we talk about homelessness in particular, the numbers sure get your attention.
Oh, they absolutely do. That's what brought this whole thing on. When I saw the numbers, I was just absolutely flabbergasted at the volumes, you know, the people, the quantities that are out there. Just, it's amazing.
Well, give us an idea.
Well, I think at the very least, we're talking about 66,000 to 70,000 people in the street every night. That's the HUD number. From the people I worked with across the country so far, we think the estimates are much higher, closer to 200,000.
I guess it's hard to pin it down.
Huh? It's very hard to pin it down. You know, they're saying they have some kind of a census, but having experienced the tent cities and stuff like that, I can't imagine how they could possibly contact everyone.
Some of these people are sort of like lost people. I mean, they fall off the radar screen, don't they?
Yeah, and some of them want to fall off the radar screen. You know, they have various issues and they don't want to be found, so they're not easy to come by.
Well, you were a soldier yourself.
I was. Mm-hmm. Back in 1966 to 68, I was a draftee drill sergeant, which is an interesting prospect.
What was that experience like for you?
Well, it was I wouldn't have passed up, you know, if I had to do over again, but it was also a little bit disarming. You know, I got involved early, and it was a kind of exciting proposition because as a drill sergeant, you get stabilized in the United States, and I certainly didn't want to go to Vietnam.
Right.
So I was a little bit on the giddy side at first because, you know, here I was, a young 22-year-old kid bossing around other 22-year-old kids my own age. Mm-hmm. But then I had a bit of an awakening, and, you know, I kind of saw that this was a lot more important than I was letting it be because I was actually responsible for these kids who were going to Vietnam, and kind of uprighted my ship, so to speak.
Well, when we talk about issues that former soldiers have when they re-enter civilian life, do we know if these issues that would lead to homelessness, if that's a result of things that happened to them in the military or if there are other things in their lives that were there all along?
It's all of the above. You know, some people go in absolutely clear-headed, clear-minded, straight, clean, sober, and they come out otherwise. Some of those people come out of the military in reasonably good shape, but they're unable to cope with, you know, the lack of authority or the authority or what have you. And the disease that has stricken so many people, PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, is running rampant right now. Traumatic brain injuries are at all-time high. And ironically, that part of those traumatic brain injuries come from the equipment that we've supplied. You know, some of the troops over there, the helmets newly designed, actually had an ill effect where explosions nearby sort of amplified the explosion and caused some traumatic brain injury. The soldiers are encouraged to drink. You know, some of the numbers that some of my veterans have quoted me are astounding, you know, how much alcohol they were able to acquire during the course of a month.
What do you mean encouraged?
Well, it settles them down. It keeps the edge off, keeps them from getting a little too anxious, so to speak, you know, and it sort of keeps the calm in the ranks a little bit. Even a friend of mine who has a son who just graduated from West Point said that their class just drinks like crazy. She said it's very disconcerting because apparently the Army has seen it, and apparently it works out well for them to keep them all a little bit sedated, so to speak, through alcohol or whatever.
And I guess from your point of view, as someone that is capturing the images of these people now, I guess maybe it doesn't matter what caused their problems, huh?
To some degree, it doesn't matter. You know, it was probably destined to happen anyway, but there are some triggers that are involved in the process that really sets it off. As a drill sergeant, you know, my job was to take your brain when you came into the Army and remold it and reshape it in the military way and give it back to you. But we don't have any potential for giving your brain back to you the way we got it in the first place. So that reshaped, remolded head comes back out into civilian life, and they're kind of on their own at that point.
On a lighter note, I never served in the military. I have to ask you, are drill sergeants as mean as they're made out to be?
Well, hell yes. you know, they've gotten decreasingly mean because of, there were issues. You know, the meanness became a little bit too much, and they clamped down on drill sergeants a little more every year. all the way from, you know, pretty violent activity to swear words. You know, now it's very difficult for you to even swear around a troop and stuff.
Uh-huh. We're talking with photographer Jerry Tovo. He has an exhibit that documents the plight of homeless veterans that's currently up at the Missouri History Museum. You mentioned, too, Jerry, that you served around the time of the Vietnam War in the military. One thing that may have changed a lot since then is that now we're talking about a lot more women as well as men.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's a big part of the whole PTSD thing, because I don't want to get into generalization here, but there are just some people that aren't equipped to deal with that combat stress, you know, day in and day out. And I think the numbers would prove that probably the female sex falls into that category a little bit more than their counterparts.
Now, is it safe to assume that you didn't have any of these issues when you left the military?
It's pretty safe. You know, there were some fallback issues from that point when I realized that I, you know, hadn't been as diligent as I should have been. There's a little guilt associated with that. So there's a little bit of that. And I have a little guilt about not going to Vietnam. You know, I look at these guys who went. And, you know, at the time, I certainly would have made the same decision again. But now look at it, I feel a little bad that I didn't go.
Well, how did this all begin exactly for you then, considering that? Because you had a career in, I guess, professional photography.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
With advertising agencies, yeah, and that kind of thing. So how did this begin for you, documenting the life or the existence of homeless veterans? And I know you ended up traveling the country. So where did this start?
For most of my commercial photography career, you know, I was pretty much a studio photographer, did some location stuff. And then there was a period in the early 90s where the business got to be so bad that the competition were bidding projects for less than their cost. And it just got to be a point where I said, this is crazy. You know, I've worked all these years, and I'm working more for less, and that's just not the way it's supposed to be spelled out. So I had an opportunity to go work for Kodak for 7 years. I worked at Kodak Professional in Chicago, and I was a professional liaison to other commercial photographers. And I was on the doorstep of digital photography, and I had access to the equipment, and I saw almost immediately that digital photography was a great partner for black and white photography. And once I got away from Kodak, I went back into the business. I was retired for maybe 3 months or something like that, and I got back into the business, but I really got full-blown into the black and white portrait mode. And for the last several years, I've really been developing that portfolio. And that's when I started hearing on the radio and reading in the paper just how many veterans there were on the street. And I'm thinking that what I do, black and white portraiture, is really well suited for that scenario.
So how long ago did this begin for you?
Probably mid-2011, the project started.
So it was decades after your service.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. But it just seemed to be a perfect match. You know, what I was doing very well, better than I'd ever done before, was black and white portraiture. And homeless people are kind of gritty, and they're crying out to be portrayed in black and white. And I just thought it was what I had to give back. So that's where we went.
I can't help thinking, what a contrast for you. What a contrast between the polished, warm and fuzzy feel-good images that you would do for advertising.
Uh-huh.
And this stark humanity of capturing the pain and suffering of people. Wow.
Wow, yeah. I'm so proud of it. I really am. It's, I'm not a big egomaniac when it comes to my accomplishments, but this is something I'm so proud of, and it really hit a home run. And the Missouri History Museum portrays it, and it's just an amazing show. The venue is perfect out there, and I'm thrilled.
And 6,000 square feet, so how much work do you have there?
There are 36 images total. 22 of them are very large. They're 4 foot by 4 foot. Huh. And then there's a kiosk, or a monolith, as we call it, that has smaller versions of it and a video.
Well, tell me about your experience traveling the country. Where'd you begin? How did you find these people? How do you approach them? I wouldn't think it would be necessarily easy to walk up to a homeless person that has mental issues and just start photographing them. It must have been tricky sometimes.
Oh, absolutely tricky. You know, we started out in the ideal world. We thought the VA would be our partner and counterpart in this thing, because they had the logistics, the wherewithal to help us find where these people are across the country. And for about a month, it panned out very, very well. But at some point, somebody closed the door on us, and we got no more help from the VA. So we're kind of on our own. We've developed a couple different techniques. We really try and do a lot of resourcing on the internet and try and touch people who are in similar, organizations or groups. see if they if we can't reach out to them and get them to help us a little bit, because it's very important to have feet on the ground, or boots on the ground in this case, where you're going. It's just really, really hard to get into the van and load up and go to, say, Nashville or Houston or someplace. But we have found little tricks we use. Recently, we had no luck in Nashville at all for 3 days, but then we were just getting ready to go home, and we came across some guys down in the tourist district in Nashville, and I asked them if, flat out, do you know any veterans here among you guys? The guy said, well, I'm a veteran. So I said, really? I said, yeah. I said, do you know any of them? He says, yeah. I said, told him what we were doing, and he got on board immediately. He saw the big picture, and big picture is a word we have to use a lot these days because a lot of people don't get the big picture. But the guy said, you know, come back tomorrow morning and I'll have, you know, at least 3 or 4 other veterans here. And it worked out really, really well. And with that, we found that if we find somebody like that, we can give them like a throwaway phone, you know, like a $15, you know, throwaway phone. And we can stay in touch with them. And they will really work very hard for us. Once somebody gets the picture, they'll help us a lot. And before that, it was hard because if we found somebody and say, can we meet here tomorrow? You'd never know for sure that they would be there, and most likely not.
But they're probably used to being exploited in other ways.
Yeah, a little bit. They're also exploitees. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are guys out there who are professional panhandlers and take advantage of the situation. Uh-huh. But I found a lot of them have just sort of fallen back into that lifestyle. I mean, a lot of them are really in a position to be in a much better position than they are. And we've had some interesting side effects like that. The one guy down in Nashville, when we were done, I pulled him aside, and his name happened to be Jerry. And I said, Jerry, I said, I'm watching you here, and I'm watching what's going on here. And it just seems to me like maybe that you're a little bit lazy in this whole thing, because you seem like you got a little more on the ball than that. Hmm. And there was a pause, and you know, he thought about it a little bit, and we went our way. And a week later, I had a chance encounter with him as I was going back to Florida. And he said, you know, I've been thinking about what you said, and, you know, I went out and found myself a job. And this guy said he can keep me busy for a year. And I called my wife, who I haven't talked to in 6 years, and that's looking better. So the guy had really sort of turned himself around. And I'm not Mother Teresa here. That's not what we set out to do. But about 2 weeks before the show opened in the Missouri History Museum, I got a phone call from him. He moved down to someplace near Memphis, and he and some other ex-homeless veterans were building homes for homeless veterans. And he said, I got to tell you, man, he said, I am so taken by what you're doing here. We're going to call this the Jerry Topo Project. I said, oh, no, don't do that. I said, I'm not worthy of that. But, you know, that's cool that you're doing that. So we had several instances like that where, you know, the person who we touched got the picture and sort of picked up and ran with it.
Huh. Don't think I expected to hear you say that.
I didn't expect to say it either.
looking at some of your portraits, for an example, there's a man with a cap and a jacket standing by a log wall, another man sort of sitting on a street, some are unshaven, disheveled. One shot's very interesting because it doesn't have anybody in it at all. There's a folded-up flag, I don't know, it was on a mantle or a shelf with maybe a medal or something.
Actually, it's two urns. They're the cremation of two veterans who died on the street. That came from Washington, D.C., where the It's the CCNV, I don't remember the actual acronym, what it stands for, but they collect the ashes, unclaimed ashes from veterans, and they store them in their facility. And the guy said, you know, I'd like you to see this stuff because, you know, we're doing this and we understand and we appreciate veterans and we don't want them to die and just go unnoticed. So we were able to do that. There were more of them, but those are the only two we had permission to do.
You said there are 32 images in the show, but that must mean you took hundreds and hundreds.
Oh, we did. We did. Absolutely did. And there's so many that got edited out, and there were some people we kind of determined that they weren't really veterans at all, so those got thrown out. Uh-huh. We're very diligent about making sure that we're portraying veterans here, not scam artists, But yeah, we did. We did many, many, many.
They're very moving. Mm-hmm. The Missouri History Museum presents I Was a Soldier, Photos of Jerry Topo. It's up and running at the Missouri History Museum until January 20th. If you go to stlpublicradio.org to the Cityscape page, we'll have a link to the Missouri History Museum's website. And there's also a slideshow on their blog page, which is very interesting. People can get sort of an idea of the kind of work you do. One final question for you, though. You know, soldiers are often, while they're in uniform, are looked up to and considered heroes at that time. But later, as in the images that you've captured, their lives have fallen apart. There's a disconnect there somewhere.
Yes, absolutely. And we were very careful when we named this. The actual name of the project is They May Have Been Heroes, the Homeless Veteran Project. They weaned out the name I Was a Soldier from one of the publications we put together. But we were very careful not to say that all soldiers are heroes, because they're not all heroes. But we have encountered people in hero status. One guy has two gold stars and a silver star. I'm sorry, two silver stars and a bronze and four purple hearts. Unfortunately, he suffers traumatically from PTSD. And he got the big picture. But yeah, he was our hero, our big subject that we used as our cover guy.
I Was a Soldier. Photos of Jerry Tovo through January 20th at the Missouri History Museum. Thank you, Jerry. They're very moving.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Coming up next on Cityscape, we preview tomorrow's American Music Showcase. This is St. Louis Public Radio.